Welcome to the deep dive, where we, well, we like to dive deep.
Straight to the heart of it.
Yeah, complex topics and all that.
You know, so you can really understand them, but without spending, you know, forever on it.
Right. You're here because you want a solid grasp of something that's kind of foundational.
Mm-hmm.
And today, it's a key idea. It's a bit on the abstract side, I'll admit that.
Yeah.
But it's about how fluids, how they act when they get turbulent.
That's it. Yeah. Think of it like a shortcut to understanding one of those, you know,
yeah.
big pieces of the puzzle.
Crucial pieces.
We're diving into a mathematical model.
Okay.
For turbulence developed by J.M. Burgers.
Okay.
And this was originally published in, well, the title's a bit of a mouthful, for handling der Koninklijke Nederlandse Akademie van Wetenschappen Afdeling Naturkunde.
Whoa, that's a lot.
Yeah, it's a mouthful. But yeah, don't worry, yeah. we're gonna pull out the important stuff for you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Our mission today is really to get to the bottom of what is Burgers' model all about.
Yeah.
And why was it and still is so important for understanding, you know, how fluids move when they get turbulent.
Right.
So we'll be pointing out some interesting connections as we go, but without getting bogged down in every single little detail.
Yeah, keep it high level.
Exactly.
Just so you know, though, the source is, you know, a technical paper. So there's going to be, you know, equations and some pretty serious theory.
That's where we come in.
Right. Breaking it down.
Exactly. So why don't we start with, you know, why is studying turbulence such a hard problem?
Right. Yeah. What makes it so tricky?
I mean, I think it comes down to a couple of main things.
Okay.
First off, the equations that describe how fluids move, the hydrodynamic equations.
Right.
They're geometrically complex. Imagine, like, you know, a map where every point has an arrow showing you which way the fluid's going and how fast. That's a vector field. These equations deal with these interconnected fields. Plus, you've got this continuity condition, which basically means, like, fluid doesn't just disappear.
Right. Yeah. Can't just vanish.
And then on top of that, you've got all the swirling motion of these vortices.
Yeah, it's not just like a simple flow in one direction.
No. You've got all these interwoven layers of motion.
Right, okay.
And then you add the second big challenge, non-linearity. So the equations have these terms where different parts of the velocity and how quickly they're changing are multiplied together.
Okay.
And these exist alongside terms related to viscosity, which is all about, like, how resistant the fluid is to flowing.
Okay.
It's this interplay between the nonlinearity and the viscosity that really makes turbulence so hard to understand.
It's all tangled up.
Yeah, it's very interconnected and not straightforward at all. And that's where Burgers comes in.
Okay.
He's trying to simplify things.
Right, break it down.
Yeah, his idea was to create a much simpler mathematical model that could still capture some of the most important features of turbulence.
Right.
But, and this is key, the variables in his equations, they aren't exactly like fluid velocity in three dimensions, you know, like in the real world.
Right.
They're more like abstract, but designed to act kind of similar.
Similar. But how?
So he's got these two main variables, u of t and v of y and t u is like the primary motion or the average motion. Like if you had a liquid flowing through a pipe, that would be u.
Okay.
And in his model, it only changes with time.
Right.
Then you've got v, which is the secondary motion. And when v isn't zero, that's like turbulence.
Okay.
Even if v itself doesn't change with time in some cases.
Right.
And then you've got y, which acts like a dimension across the flow.
Okay.
In the main setup, y is between 0 and b, and v is 0 at those points, like at the walls of a channel.
So like a channel width.
Yeah, exactly. But he also explores later what happens in a space without boundaries, which is kind of interesting.
Okay, so we've got u, the main flow,
mm-hmm.
the chaotic turbulent part,
okay.
and y, the dimension across the channel.
You got it.
Makes sense. So what do these equations actually look like?
Okay, so get ready. Here are the two core equations
right.
that Burgers came up with.
Hit me.
First, for the primary motion, u a u dt equals p over b, minus nu times u over b squared minus 1 over b times the integral from 0 to b of v d.
Okay.
And then for the secondary motion of v, partial derivative of v with respect to t, plus 2 times v times the partial derivative of v with respect to y, minus u over b times v, equals nu times the second partial derivative of v with respect to y.
Wow. Okay. That's That's a lot to unpack there.
It is a bit, yeah.
What are P and that little, what is that, nu? Is that a nu?
Yeah, nu. So P, that's a constant. It's like the driving force behind that main motion, that U.
Okay.
And nu is the viscosity. Think of it like how resistant the fluid is to flowing. Like honey has high viscosity.
Right.
Water has low. You'll notice in the equation for U, the terms with nu, those represent the drag or the friction.
Okay.
Just proportional to U, divided by the channel width.
Right.
For V, it's proportional to the second rate of change of V across the channel.
Okay.
Burgers actually mentions that he could have used like different viscosity values for U and for V.
Okay.
But it wouldn't really change the important outcomes.
So it's not a key difference there.
No, not really.
Okay. What about there was that 2V and then partial derivative of V with respect to Y in the second equation?
Mm-hmm.
That looks nonlinear, to use the technical term.
You got it. Yeah. That's the crucial nonlinear term.
Okay.
And our source, they highlighted right from the start how these nonlinear terms are like super important for capturing what turbulence is all about.
All right.
Burgers, he specifically chose this form so that you could derive an equation for the energy in the system.
Right, yeah. Energy balance.
Yeah.
Seems pretty fundamental.
Very.
How does that work out in this model?
Okay, so you can mathematically manipulate these equations.
Okay.
You multiply the first one by U, the second one by V. Then you do this calculus thing called integration on the second one across the channel width, keeping in mind that V is zero at the edges. Combine all those results, and you get an equation that tells you how the total kinetic energy changes over time.
And what's the main point of this energy balance equation?
So it shows that the total kinetic energy, it goes up because that external force, P, it's doing work on the main flow, the U.
Okay.
At the same time, energy is being lost. It's being dissipated because of those viscous frictional effects we talked about.
Right.
But the really interesting part is this term, U times V over B in the second equation. That represents a transfer of energy from that primary motion, the U, into the secondary motion, the V.
Which is the turbulence.
Exactly. And because there's a corresponding term in the equation for U, it means this energy transfer is an internal process.
So the main flow is feeding energy into the turbulence.
Yeah, like it's losing some of its organized energy to power the chaotic stuff.
Okay, interesting.
And Burgers, he specifically wanted this energy transfer to depend on the strength of U itself. Not on how the velocity changes across the flow like it does in the full hydrodynamic equations.
Right.
He also points out that the last term in the V equation, nu times the second partial derivative of V with respect to Y, that's responsible for shuffling energy around between the different components of the secondary motion. It's like redistributing the energy within the turbulence itself.
Okay. We're starting to get a feel for how this model works.
Good.
But how do we actually, you know, how do we solve or analyze these equations?
Mm-hmm.
Our source mentions Fourier series.
Yeah.
Which sounds pretty mathy.
It is. It's a powerful tool here. So to understand V, the secondary motion, Burgers uses this idea of representing it as a sum of simpler, like wave-like components,
yeah,
using a Fourier series. So it's V equals the sum from N equals 1 to infinity of F sub N of T times sine of N pi Y over B. Imagine taking a complex wave and you're breaking it down into these simple sine waves, each with its own strength and frequency.
Oh.
Kind of like how a musical chord is made up of individual notes.
Right.
And this specific form, it makes sure that V is zero at the channel walls where Y is zero and Y is B. Those F sub N's, those coefficients, they change over time.
Okay. So we're looking at the turbulent motion as a combination of these different wave patterns.
Mm-hmm.
With varying strengths that can change over time.
Precisely. And
yeah,
if you put this Fourier series into the energy balance equation, it becomes a sum of terms.
Okay.
Each term, B over 4 times F sub N squared, that's like the energy contained in a particular wave component associated with a specific N.
Right.
Similarly, you've got nu times N squared pi squared over 2B times F sub N squared. That's the rate at which energy is being lost by that component due to viscosity.
Each wave has its own energy and its own rate of energy loss.
Yeah, exactly. And even though the overall energy equation and another related equation, which we don't need to get into here, they show these components as separate sums.
Okay.
The fact that there are these quadratic terms in the equation that describes how F sub N changes over time, that's crucial. It means that these different wave components, they're not independent.
Right.
If one gets stronger, it's going to affect the other.
They're all connected.
In fluid dynamics, this is how larger swirls of fluid can break down and create smaller swirls.
Right, the cascading effect.
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
So you get these big eddies breaking down into smaller and smaller ones.
Makes sense. Now, our source talks about laminar versus turbulent solutions within the model, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What's that all about?
So the model has a very simple laminar solution.
Okay.
Where U equals PB over nu and V is zero. This is a nice, smooth, orderly flow.
Right.
No turbulence at all.
Okay.
But to see when turbulence might show up, you can imagine introducing small disturbances, small values of V.
Right.
While keeping the main flow U steady.
Okay.
And using that Fourier series, you can analyze whether those disturbances will grow or whether they'll fade away over time.
Okay.
That tells you about the stability of that laminar solution.
So what decides whether those disturbances grow into turbulence or just die out?
It all depends on the relationship between U, the strength of that main flow.
Okay.
Nu, the viscosity, and B, the width of the channel.
Okay.
The analysis shows that if U is less than nu pi squared over B, then a certain mathematical factor associated with each Fourier coefficient, that F sub N,
right.
It has a negative real part.
Okay.
That means all those F sub N's, they'll decrease over time and you'll stay in that nice, smooth laminar flow.
Okay.
But if U is greater than nu pi squared over B, at least one of those coefficients is going to start growing exponentially.
Uh-oh.
Meaning the laminar solution is unstable and you're going to get turbulence.
Okay.
A new solution where V is not zero. And importantly, because of those nonlinear terms, it's not just the components where U is greater than no N squared pi squared over B that become active.
Right.
Eventually, all the F sub N's get involved.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So there's like a tipping point for that main flow speed beyond which you can't avoid the turbulence.
Yeah. Our source also mentions the Reynolds number here.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
I've heard of that.
It comes up everywhere in fluid dynamics. So in this model, the combination of U times B over nu.
Okay.
That acts just like the Reynolds number, which we'll call Re. In real fluids,
great.
It's a dimensionless number. It tells you the ratio of the inertial forces to the viscous forces.
Cool.
And the critical value in Berger's model for when you get turbulence.
Mm-hmm.
It's pi squared.
Okay, so a Reynolds number above, what, roughly 10?
Yeah, about that.
In Berger's model, suggests we're going to see some turbulent action.
Exactly.
Okay, now the discussion moves on to what are called stationary turbulent solutions.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that means the turbulence isn't changing over time.
Yeah, that's de Kuai-Flezet. If you think of U, the main flow, as being constant, Berger's model actually has solutions for V that don't change with time either.
Okay.
And these stationary turbulent solutions can even be consistent with the equation for U.
Right.
If you choose the right value for P, that external force.
Okay.
These solutions, they can be found using some pretty advanced math, but the details aren't super important for us to understand.
Right.
What's interesting is that these solutions come in two sets, and they're related to each other by a kind of a mirror symmetry.
Okay.
So if you've got a solution, we'll call it V plus of Y.
Right.
Then minus V minus of B minus Y, that's also a solution. Uh-oh. It's like flipping it and changing the sign.
I see. Okay.
And each of these sets of solutions, it's linked to a number. We'll call it M.
Okay.
M can be any integer from 1 up to a maximum value, which is determined by the integer part of 2 times the square root of UB over nu pi squared, or another way to say it, the square root of Re divided by pi.
Okay. So this M is what, like categorizing different patterns of turbulence?
Yeah, kind of. And the solution with the specific M, it has M minus 1 points within the channel where V is 0. Berger's notes that this is kind of similar to what you find in certain linear differential equations, where the strength of the turbulent motion gets weaker as M increases, and the total number of these stable patterns seems to be limited.
Okay.
It's like there are only so many fundamental ways the turbulence can organize itself.
Right, okay. So what happens when the Reynolds number is really high?
Okay, so when Re is large, especially for the simpler patterns with low values of M, like M equals 1 or 2, the region from Y equals 0 to B, you can split it into these broad areas where those viscous forces are so small, you can just ignore them.
Right.
And then you have these narrower regions where the UV over B term, that's negligible. So in those first types of regions, the equation simplifies to 2V times the partial derivative of V with respect to Y. minus u over b times v equals 0. And in the second type, it becomes nu times the second partial derivative of v with respect to y minus 2v times the partial derivative of v with respect to y equals 0.
So you've got these zones, different zones with different dominant effects.
Yes, exactly. And the solutions in these narrow regions, those represent what Burgers calls a dissipation layers.
Dissipation layers.
Yeah. They're similar to boundary layers you see in real fluids near solid surfaces,
right,
where the velocity changes really fast.
Okay.
And in these layers, there's a steep change in V showing where most of the energy is being dissipated due to viscosity.
So it's showing where the friction is really doing its work.
Yeah, exactly. Burgers even says that these dissipation layers, they can occur not just at the boundaries, but also within the flow for higher M's.
Okay, interesting. Now, let's go back to the Fourier series. What does the breakdown of these stationary solutions into waves look like?
Okay, so when you analyze those stationary solutions using the Fourier series, you get specific forms for those coefficients, the F sub n.
Okay.
And for the most basic case, which is case 14a in his paper,
right,
for low wave numbers, which means those components with long wavelengths where n is much smaller than the Reynolds number.
Right.
The strength of F sub n is roughly the same for all the odd values of n, and it's almost zero for the even ones.
Okay.
But for high wave numbers, very short wavelengths, where n is larger than Ray, the strength of F sub n drops off really quickly, like exponentially.
Okay. And what does this tell us about how the energy is distributed?
So the energy in each component, which is related to the square of F sub n, it's roughly constant for the long wavelengths, and then it drops off sharply at the short wavelength end.
Okay.
So the total energy of the turbulence, it's mostly in those first few long wavelength components.
Right.
And it's not really affected that much by the viscosity.
Okay. What about energy dissipation, though?
Right. The rate of energy dissipation for each component, it's also pretty much constant for the long wavelengths and then decreases exponentially for the short wavelengths.
Okay.
But there are infinitely many of these components, right? N goes to infinity.
Right, in theory.
Yeah. So if you were to assume that what you see at long wavelengths just keeps going, the total dissipation would become infinite.
Right.
But the key is that the spectrum has a natural cutoff.
Okay.
Where that exponential decrease kicks in around n equal to re.
Right.
That cutoff keeps things finite.
Gotcha.
It's interesting, though, the total dissipation, it involves a much wider range of these components than the total energy does.
So even though the short wavelengths don't have much energy individually, they're still important for how much energy is lost overall.
Exactly. Burgers actually calculates the total dissipation for case 14a.
Okay.
And it's proportional to u cubed. And the effective number of components involved is about Ray over 6. And similar things happen for the other stationary solutions he finds. And he stresses that this is a direct result of that interplay between that nonlinear term and that small viscosity term that we saw in the original equation for V.
Right. Now, the source has a section called additional remarks concerning the spectrum.
Yeah.
Anything particularly interesting there?
Well, he points out that those approximate forms we found for the coefficients at low n, they actually give you an exact solution to a simplified set of equations where you just ignore the viscosity term completely.
Okay.
But that solution's not unique.
Right.
And for the components with large n, the viscosity becomes much more important.
Right.
He even goes into some deeper math to find an approximate form for the coefficients at very high n.
Okay.
Which he links back to the equation that governs those dissipation layers we talked about.
Right.
It's really getting into the nitty-gritty of the spectrum.
Okay. What about the flow of energy through the spectrum?
Yeah, that's how the energy gets transferred from those large eddies to the smaller ones.
Right.
So Burgers looks at the energy equation for a single wave component.
Okay.
And he identifies different terms that represent, first, energy being gained from U, the main flow.
Okay.
Then energy being lost to dissipation.
Mm-hmm.
And then energy being exchanged with other components.
Okay.
Both those with longer wavelengths, lower n, and shorter wavelengths, higher n.
Okay.
He shows that after the first few components have taken most of the energy from the main flow, the amount of energy being transferred onward, it becomes pretty much constant for those initial few components.
Right.
And those energy exchange terms, they all involve combinations of three of those Fourier coefficients multiplied together. So again, it's all about that nonlinearity.
Right. Okay. So energy tends to move up the spectrum from longer to shorter wavelengths.
Mm.
Now, what about solutions that aren't stationary, where V actually changes over time?
Okay, so for those, Burgers goes back to those simplified versions of the equation we talked about before. One where viscosity is dominant and one where it's ignored.
Right.
That equation where viscosity is ignored, it can be solved using a technique called the method of characteristics.
Okay.
And he finds that if the initial turbulent flow has regions where the velocity is increasing across the channel, a positive slope.
Okay.
The solution tends to become more uniform over time.
Okay.
But if there are regions where the velocity decreases across the channel, mm-hmm. it tends to develop these really sharp changes, almost like discontinuities.
Discontinuities, like a sudden break in the flow.
Yeah, mathematically, that's what it would be. If true discontinuities were to form, the Fourier series would have coefficients that decrease like 1 over n.
Okay.
And in that case, you could still calculate the total energy, but the total dissipation would be infinite.
Uh-oh.
Because the rate of change of velocity at that discontinuity would be infinite. But Burgers argues that in reality, and in his model, thanks to that small viscosity term, true discontinuities can't actually happen.
Yeah.
Instead, what you get is in those regions where it looks like a discontinuity is about to form, viscosity becomes important.
Right.
And it creates this narrow, smooth region, which he calls a dissipation region.
So the viscosity is like a buffer.
Yeah, exactly.
Selling things out.
Yeah, preventing things from going to infinity.
Okay.
And within those regions, it's almost like a little pocket of smooth laminar flow.
Interesting.
And the total energy dissipated in these regions, it's finite, and it's proportional to the cube of the difference in velocity across the region.
Okay.
And it doesn't actually depend on the value of the viscosity itself.
Interesting.
This smoothing also affects those Fourier coefficients at high n.
Okay.
It makes them decrease exponentially, not just like 1 over n, which is similar to what we saw with those stationary solutions.
Right. So what happens when we look at an infinite domain?
Okay. So no channel walls or boundaries.
Right. Just open space.
In that case, Burgers sets the main flow, that U, to zero.
Okay.
So there's no external energy coming in.
Right.
The equation for the turbulence becomes the same as the one that describes those viscosity-dominated regions we just talked about.
Okay.
And a typical solution here, it represents what he calls a domain of coherence, which spreads out over time.
A domain of coherence. What's that?
So it's a region where the turbulent velocity, the V, is significantly different from zero.
Okay.
And as time goes on, this region grows, getting bigger proportionally to the square root of time.
Oh.
While the peak intensity decreases inversely proportional to the square root of time.
Interesting.
This type of solution, it actually has what's called conserved momentum, which means the total momentum in that region stays the same,
okay,
even though the energy is decreasing because of dissipation.
So it spreads out and weakens over time.
Yeah, but keeps its overall momentum.
Okay. What about how the velocity at different points are related, like spatial correlation?
Good question. Burgers uses this mathematical thing called the spatial correlation integral.
All right.
It tells you how the velocity at two different points separated by a certain distance, how they're statistically related.
Okay.
He defines something called a correlation coefficient, R of tau, for distances that are like comparable to the size of the turbulent domain. You can use an approximation to calculate R of tau.
Okay.
And it basically becomes zero for separations that are much bigger than the domain itself.
Right.
And for really small separations, it's like a parabolic shape.
Okay. Now, we have to remember that Burgers' model is a simplification, right?
Mm-hmm.
How does it connect with like the bigger, more complete statistical theories of turbulence, like Kolmogorov's work?
Yeah, that's where it gets really interesting. So Burgers looks at how ideas of similarity,
okay,
which are used a lot in those statistical theories, can be applied to his model.
Okay.
And he draws parallels with the work of Taylor von Karman,
okay,
and especially Kolmogorov, who focused on the stats of turbulence at really high Reynolds numbers.
Right, yeah. Super turbulent.
Exactly.
Okay.
Those theories, they often make assumptions like viscosity doesn't matter for large scales.
Okay.
Energy goes from big eddies to small ones.
Mm-hmm.
And the energy is mainly dissipated in the smallest eddies.
Right.
And what's amazing is that Burgers shows his model, even though it's simpler.
Yeah.
It actually does all those things.
Really?
So even though it's just a model, it's still getting at some fundamental truths about turbulence.
That's pretty amazing. For something so, relatively speaking, mathematically straightforward.
Right. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
So in Kolmogorov's theory, there's this thing called the mean rate of energy dissipation per unit mass.
Got
That's like a key characteristic of the turbulent flow.
Right.
burgers, he adapts this to his one-dimensional model using mean dissipation per unit length, which he calls epsilon.
Okay.
And then he uses dimensional analysis.
Okay.
So that's looking at the basic units of like energy, length, and time to relate the average length scale, which he calls L.
Okay.
And an effective age of the turbulence, T, to the mean energy, E, and epsilon.
Yep.
Using those relationships, he shows that the correlation function in his model, R of R.
Right.
It takes a form that depends on R to the 2/3 power, just like in Kolmogorov's famous result.
Wow. So this one-dimensional model, it's matching up with this three-dimensional theory.
Yeah. It's pretty wild.
That's a huge finding.
It is.
Okay.
Burgers also looks at the energy spectrum in this free turbulence case.
Okay.
Using a formula from Taylor. He finds that for high wave numbers, meaning small eddies, but not the absolute smallest,
right,
the energy distribution E of N is proportional to N to the power of -5/3.
Okay.
This matches results from Ansager and von Weizsäcker,
okay,
who use dimensional arguments based on energy dissipation.
Gotcha.
He also talks a bit about the energy transfer and this free turbulence,
okay,
noting that you need to consider relationships between three of those Fourier coefficients. He mentions Ansager's idea of energy being broken down in steps,
okay,
and shows how, by making certain assumptions, he can get back to that E of N proportional to N to the -5/3 law.
Right.
Highlighting the importance of those higher order correlations.
Okay, so, but he does mention some limitations and differences,
yeah,
compared to the original system.
Right. He points out that this -5/3 law, it's different from the equal dissipation across all degrees of freedom that he found earlier.
Mm-hmm.
For the bounded system with that driving flow, the U,
right,
he thinks this is probably because of the influence of that main flow and the boundaries.
Right.
Meaning that freely decaying turbulence,
right,
might be fundamentally different from turbulence that's being driven by an external force.
Okay.
It's an interesting distinction.
Yeah. And what about his attempt to make a statistical description?
So he tried to develop a statistical approach,
okay,
where you think of turbulence as this sequence of different states, and the average of the energy equation over all those states, it should be zero.
Right.
But this led to a problem. It predicted infinite total energy dissipation, which he called the violet catastrophe.